Welcome to Positive Personal Power with hope, aspiration, and encouragement. Our goal is to build and enhance people's confidence and strength to handle life's challenges. Now, let me introduce you to your host, Nathaniel Skula.
Well, I am very happy, actually, today. I'm joined by Laura Gasner-Otting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I thought so. I actually wrote that down from memory, believe it or not. And because last time when I interviewed you, it was super. And you are actually a Washington Post best-selling author. You are a regular contributor now, since we spoke, to Good Morning America and the Today Show, and you're a number 2 global startup coach and a number 10 motivational speaker as well. So obviously that's a bit difficult right now. So we're gonna talk. Firstly, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
It's a real pleasure. And yeah, firstly, we're gonna talk about the main topic is how to say no to this new normal, in quotes, and create the life that we want, right? And you know, with your book, Limitless, with limitless opportunities, how do we like find our calling in life?
Well, so I think the first thing that we have to do is we have to understand why either A, we feel like we don't have a calling right now, or B, like the work that we're doing isn't right for us. And I think a lot of us feel like we don't have a calling because we've been given this definition of calling as if it has to be this like higher purpose, this lofty purpose. It has to be like this big thing where you're wearing the white hat and you're feeding the lepers in India, like Mother Teresa. And the truth is that most of us have a calling that's much smaller and a calling that is much more personal to us and a calling that is right for us right now at this age and at this life phase that we're in. So giving us ourselves this pressure that we have to have this big giant calling, and if we don't, we're just pushing papers, I think gets us into the problem in the first place. And then we have trouble finding what that calling is going to be because we think that there are people who exist in life who have a calling. They were born to be a certain person and do a certain thing. And the truth is, I don't know about you, Nat, but my calling has changed throughout my life. Like I have different callings at different ages and life stages because I know different things. I've learned different things. What I'm reading about in the news, what's happening in my personal life, what's happening with my personal health, or what's happening, you know, just generally in the world, the opportunities that I have or that I don't have impact that calling. So I think it's really thinking about how it's been assigned to us, what calling should be, and then how we have not given ourselves the grace to grow and to change and to evolve in that calling as we go. So how do we find our calling? The first thing is we say, what fuels you? Right? What fuels you? What excites you? What do you want to get up in the morning to do every single day? And that could be a business that you want to grow. It could be a bottom line that you want to build. It could be a family that you want to nurture. It could be you. If you're an entrepreneur, you could be your own calling. And yeah, it could be a societal ill that you wish to solve, but your calling has to just be your calling. And we have to stop giving votes about that. We have to stop giving votes in our life to people who shouldn't even have voices. So how do we find it? The first thing we do is we ignore everybody else who's given us this idea of calling that's wrong, that's not personal to us. And then we figure out what we really care about and what really makes us happy. And we pursue that.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I agree. I've been through various different callings myself, you know. And I mean, I think, you know, I don't really want to talk about religion. I don't really bring that into my show. But like, you know, being a Christian, when every so often the reverend or and the church family, they turn around and they will say, look, you need to be spreading the word and things like this. Yeah. But over and above that, they say, well, what are you good at? Right. And then how can you inspire people, teach people, coach people to get something from that? Right. And that's kind of what I'm doing with this show and all my content and my relationships. It's really to encourage people and give them hope, right? That they can move beyond the normal which they seem to be stuck in. Yeah, because I don't know. I mean, I was reading something the other day. I think it was something like, was it 65% of people are unhappy with their jobs, or more than that?
Yeah, well, at least 2/3 of the American workforce is disengaged in their work. I know that. I don't know how that translates worldwide, but I would imagine right now, as people are working more hours because they're working from home and the stress that they're feeling, that number probably is at least the same, if not more, worldwide.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. But how do we, where do we begin in creating the life that we want?
So, you know, I think that, you know, to go back to your church analogy, and again, we don't need to be religious here, but I think, yeah, you need to spread the word. But how do you spread the word? Do you spread the word by going out and telling people how they have to be? Or do you go out and spread the word by being the kind of person that other people want to be like? Do you go out and you live your values? And so I think one of the first questions you can ask yourself is the work that I'm doing right now allowing me to manifest my values on a daily basis? How does this work contribute to the kind of life that I want to have? And that's the question of, is it paying me the kind of money that's giving me the lifestyle I want? Is it giving me the sort of freedom that it is creating the life that I want in terms of how, you know, spending time with my family or on hobbies or bettering myself? Is it manifesting my values on a daily basis? And is it allowing me to create the career trajectory that I'm looking for? So does this work that I do contribute to the life that I'm living? And if you are doing work that feels like you're calling, it feels like you're in this really good place in your work, and it's allowing you to live that kind of life that you want, then that gets you really close to being consonant with who you are. So, you know, I often ask people when I interview them, I often ask people to tell me about a time when the very best of what they do, the thing that they love to do, the work that they enjoy more than anything else, you know, that, like, what would you do if you didn't get paid? Tell me about a time when the very best of what you do was being called upon to solve a problem at hand, a problem you actually cared about. And were you being rewarded for that, whether it was emotionally, karmically, financially, whatever, in some way that was meaningful to you? Those moments when the very best of what you do is being called upon to solve a problem that you care about, and you're being rewarded for a way that is meaningful to you, are the moments where you are in consonance. Those are the moments where you really are truly who you are. And so if you're looking to build more calling into your life, if you're looking to build more of work that really is meaningful and matters to you, I'd ask you to start there and to think about those moments. We've all had those flashes of brilliance when we're like, yeah, I could run through walls. I could leap over tall buildings. I could see through, you know, the fog. And what happens is we think that those are accidental, when in fact they are usually because we've put a number of things in place, and then we have these coincidences of luck, but we don't then do anything to try to replicate that. And so I would say, find those moments when the what you are matches the who you do, when the work that you love is solving the problem that you care about, and you're being rewarded for it in a way that makes sense to you, and then spend time trying to replicate that. How do I spend more time doing that work? And the more time you spend doing that work, the less time you have for all the rest of the distractions.
Got it. But you also need to be ready, right? Like for example, if you want to grow something, you need to just learn everything about it, right? Like that's my attitude of just sort of taking a look. Okay, so I enjoy doing interviews. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy doing that. So, and then it's like, well, how am I going to make that better? Like, you know, and then it's like, right, so what courses am I going to study to get better at these things? Yeah, I've been doing loads of courses recently, like absolutely loads. Like, did one on storytelling a couple of weeks back. I was lured into a false sense of security though with that one, to be honest. It was so hard. 58 minutes. Okay, this course was supposed to last. Yeah, right. So yeah. I was thinking, oh, I'm going to go in there, 58 minutes. I'm going to come out. I'll be a brilliant storyteller. And I went into this course. It took me an entire day, whole day, until 6 p.m. at night. Right, because in between each one of these modules, there were tasks that I had to do. Yeah. So I ended up working so hard. I was so tired. I had to literally take some time off the next couple of days. It was so tiring. The brain was so tired. And like right now, this is a big thing for people, you know, because there are many people out of work. There are many people who, you know, their businesses have perhaps not disappeared altogether, but they've had to contract them. Over here, we're lucky we've got a lot of help from the government, etc. But it's very tough. So people potentially pivoting, they're reinventing themselves, you know, to move forwards to this life that they want. But it's like, I think expectations in many ways need to be weakened. I think people are obsessed with the next Silicon Valley idea. They're obsessed. They think that they can just wake up one morning, lick their finger, stick it out the window and come up with some amazing idea that's going to make them as rich as Bill Gates. Yeah. And the reality is that just leads to depression. Yeah. And unhappiness. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we reinvent ourselves without like being out of control?
Yeah, you know, it's a very funny idea, this thought of like overnight success, right? Like somebody decides to reinvent themselves and they're an overnight success. Somebody else decides and they're a failure. And, you know, I spent 20 years doing executive search for some of the largest organizations, international organizations on the planet. And so I interviewed thousands of incredible leaders, boldface names, you know, and I got to hear their stories. And a lot of those stories are in my book, Limitless. But when I sold that company and I decided to go into speaking, I was asked to do a TEDx talk. That TEDx talk got some attention. That got me invited to speak somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else. And people kept offering me money to speak. And I was like, huh, tell me about this thing called speaking. I like this, right? Or I go and I get on a stage for 45 minutes and you pay me a ridiculous sum of money. And then I leave with no deliverables left. I like that job. After being in the 20 years of deliverables business, I like that job. And then as I was getting, you know, invited to bigger and bigger stages where I was staring the stage with, you know, Robin Roberts and Malala and people like that, I thought, God, you know, all these people have books. I should get me one of them. I should write one. So I decided to write the book that became Limitless, How to Ignore Everybody, Carve Your Own Path, and Live Your Best Life. And it took me about 3 weeks to write the book. And people are like, what, 3 weeks? How could you do that? And then I tell them, yeah, but it took me 25 years and 3 weeks to come up with the book. So we see all these people who we think, oh, they're just lucky. Oh, they put their finger at the, you know, they licked their finger, put it out the window and took the pulse and created the next Facebook. But the truth is that every success story that we see, even if it's one in a pivot, still sits on a foundation of so much other work. So, you know, when COVID happened, and the speaking business disappeared, I spent like a month having this massive pity party and like, oh, you know, it's so sad. I can't get on stages. I can't get on planes to get to the stages. I was doing my bucket list, you know, 5,000 people in an audience. Oh my God, that's incredible. Boo-hoo, it's not going to happen. Everything I've worked for the last 3 years and 25 years and 3 years is gone and I'm so sad. And then I had this realization that COVID wasn't the problem. I was the problem. That it was actually my own creativity, my lack of creativity, that was the problem. And, you know, I we were talking about this before we started recording, but I think that there's never been a time when access to audience has been so democratized, little de-democratized, and there have been so low of barriers for entry. So I can now go live to my tribe every day with my webcam and my microphone and my internet connection, and suddenly 5,000 people in an audience is nothing. I could have 50,000 people if I wanted to, if I figured out how to do this right. And so it really, for me, came down to asking myself three very simple questions. The first is, what's the calling that I want to serve, right? What is the problem in the world that I want to solve? And that problem could be that, you know, we need to cure cancer, or the problem could be I need more money in my bank account, right? But like, what's the problem that we want to serve, right? What's that calling? That's number one. The second is, what is the work that I can do that actually connects to that calling that moves me closer to reaching that place? What's the work that I personally can do? What is the solution that I can bring to the table? And then the third one is, what's the most effective medium through which I can do that particular work? And so when we think about reinvention and we think about pivoting and we think about how to create, like start all over again, the truth is that we're building on a whole foundation of other work. And the question is, where does that position ourselves right now so that we can actually move forward with the most efficiency and strike as quickly as possible? So that if what we want to do is cure this ill or raise that family or build that bottom line or buy that Maserati and a beach house or whatever it is, we can do that through where we are. But it really comes down to, you know, what's the problem you want to serve? What's the solution that that problem needs? And what's the best medium through which you can deliver that solution?
Super. It's not difficult, right? But it takes a certain degree of concentration, but also being able to shut out the noise, right? To shut out the distractions. That's why, yeah, I love to podcast, because I get to talk to you. I don't look at my phone. I normally switch it off, yeah, or put it on airplane mode. I've just done that on my watch, right? I forgot. So for me, that gives me a chance to switch off completely and be in the moment, right? Because when you're doing these things, if you're not in the moment and you're not concentrating on what on earth you're doing, then you're like everyone else that says, I could have done that. Well, why didn't you do it? Well, I didn't do it because I was distracted and I let that distraction stop me from doing what I want to do, right?
Yeah.
And I know it's not easy right now, but like, remember what it was, Picasso, that he was in a, I know we talked about this story last time we spoke. I'm sure we did. And Picasso was in a restaurant in Paris. And this lady, I think, walked up to him and said, can you draw me a picture on this napkin? And he said, sure. And he drew this picture in 30 seconds or something. And then he said, that'll be 1,000,000 francs, please, or something. And the lady turned around and said, what do you mean? It took you like 30 seconds. He said, yes, but it's taken me like, was it 30 years to be able to, or 50 years to be able to draw that in 30 seconds? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You said earlier, like, it's not that difficult. I think it is difficult. I think it's just not that complicated, right? It's not that complicated. And I think we make it complicated because we invent all of these things. We're telling ourselves all these lies. Like, we tell ourselves things like, I'm not ready, or I've never done this before, or the people who like me right now when I'm being the person that they want in the new normal, like, that is expected, they're not going to like me if I become the person I really want to be. And so I think it's super difficult because it takes us being much stronger than I think we currently are in a lot of cases, but it's far less complicated than I think we often make it out to be.
Yeah. It isn't easy. I'm not going to say it's easy, yeah, but it's a question of persistence, isn't it? And determination and just not giving up, right? Like, you know the story of the hare and the tortoise.
Yeah? Yes.
Well, you know, that analogy springs to mind a lot, really, in business and in success, yeah? Because it's like you take all this action and then you run out of steam, yeah? And that's the biggest problem, I think. You know, certainly in the past when I've been doing things, I've been like, yeah, I'm going to do this and then that's going to happen and this is going to happen. And then you get to the point where you just run out of steam and it's like, well, so don't try to do tomorrow's work today. I mean, that's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned, because you might be so excited about your idea and you might love doing it so much that you think, oh, I've got to get this done. I'm really enjoying it. And then it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you've done tomorrow's work and the next day's work. And then you realize, actually, if you'd have paced yourself, you'd have enjoyed it more. You'd have had a life, right? Exercised, yeah, because I know you're big into exercise, yeah, as well. And it's just like, well, come on, guys, just take it easy a bit. You know, we can enjoy it, but let's try not to be a slave to the goal. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's two more things. I think that's so valid and that happens all the time. And I think there's two more things that I would add on to that we get wrong. The first is, sometimes when we're doing tomorrow's work today, we're also trying to fix today's work by just doing tomorrow's work, right? So when I was in the final edits of the book, I talked to a dear friend of mine, Mitch Joel, who has written, you know, tons of best-selling books on brands and marketing. And I said, God, I it's not quite right. I just need to write more. And he's like, stop trying to fix this book by shoving the next book into it. Like, I was working so hard. I was just trying to, like, I didn't get it right, so I'm just adding more. And he's like, no, stop doing that. Fix what you have. He's like, leave everything else. And it was such good advice. I was doing tomorrow's work today because I couldn't fix today's work. So I was just like, I'm just going to keep going with just persistence and see if I can get it. So I would add that onto that. And then the second thing is, I think sometimes we get this idea in our head and we get so excited about it. And we're like, finally, I found my passion. I'm going to follow my passion. Everything's going to be great. And then we get exhausted by it. And then things start to go wrong and we don't necessarily see the return on investment. The minute we put something out into the world, everyone doesn't stop what they're doing and go, oh my God, Nat, that's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to buy 18 copies of it and send 12 to my friends. And then we go, oh, I guess it just wasn't right. I'll just do something else. And the problem with follow your passion is that it has this idea that the second you find your passion, everything's going to be perfect. Like the angels are going to sing and the girls with their flower crowns are going to look out over their, you know, their over Coachella or, you know, their beautiful beach sunsets. It'll be like, follow your passion. Everything's wonderful. Yay. Let's all get into like lotus position and breathe into our liver energy. And the truth is that if you following your passion is like the world's worst advice, because it basically says as soon as something goes wrong, clearly that wasn't your passion, because if you followed your passion, everything would be perfect. But the truth is that if you're going to, you can't just follow your passion. You have to invest in your passion, because your passion is going to beat you up and it is going to gut you and it's going to turn you inside out. It's going to have its way with you before you finally get it right. But all of this idea of you have to pace yourself, because if you do tomorrow's work today, you'll exhaust yourself, but you also won't take the time to have the energy to reinvest. Every time you get something wrong and you learn and you iterate and you innovate so that you can get it right, because doesn't your passion deserve you getting it right? So I would just add those two things to what you said, because I think it's such good advice to think about, you know, pacing yourself and then on the journey, understanding that failure isn't finale. That's your fulcrum point where you actually get to learn more and you get to do better so that you can do tomorrow's work better when you do it tomorrow than if you were doing it today.
I remember you said that last time and it really sunk in. I was going through a lot of grief last time with something that I was working on talking to you really helped me a lot last time. And I wanted to say thank you for that, because I really think you're incredible. And you know, I really hope that people actually take the time to listen and actually invest in themselves right now, because right now is the perfect opportunity. Yeah. All right. Things might not be easy. Yeah. Things aren't easy for anyone right now. Yeah. You know, people who are doing really well are working twice as many hours as they were before. People who aren't doing well are panicking and worrying and stressing, and they're having to work twice as many hours as before. Yes. to make ends meet, right? And so it's a real struggle. But like, I mean, when I interviewed Stanley Tucci the other week, right, he and all the other guests he explained it very, very well. Success, there's some sort of ease that's involved, and it's almost like you it's almost like a really one of these comfortable chairs you see in my background. Yeah. And Stanley sat in his Eames chair and he said, and it's about ease. It's about sinking in to what you're doing, and you're always going to try and strive, aren't you, to get to the next thing, to get that next role, is what he said, and to you know, direct that next film and produce that next film. Yeah. But it was just an ease that was what I took away from that. And I think that's really important, because otherwise it's just stressful. It becomes too stressful, you know?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think we spend so much time worrying about what everybody else thinks about us. And we're so busy trying to like run and keep up with the Joneses and all of that. And I think this idea of the new normal that we've been talking about says that everybody's doing things a certain way, so we should do it that way too, right? I mean, if everybody has to be perfect on Zoom and have the green screen up behind them, well, maybe we should too. And this is the thing that I talked about on Good Morning America, where I did a thing where I said, you know, when we're all going back to work, how do we stay connected with our colleagues on this personal level? Well, the first thing we do is we drop the green screen. And it was a fun little bit because, you know, I had like a pool behind me and then I like hit a thing and all of a sudden it's like, boom, you can see my bookshelves. And if you look at my bookshelves, you know, you see the pictures of my kids and you see my husband and you see my baby shoes and you see, you know, I've got a gay pride flag and an American flag. And I've got, you know, stuff from, you know, rowing competitions and running. And, you know, so you can learn about me. And suddenly when you see the books that I read and my art and all that, we can become much more connected. And I think in that connection, because we're living at a time right now where there's no more small talk, right? Before we started recording, we got on the call and you said, how are you? And we talked about how I was. And then I said, how are you? And we talked about how you are. And it wasn't just, hey, how are you? Let's get on with the show. We had a real conversation. And I think that the ability to see each other and connect with each other and just be in that moment, rather than trying to like impress and be perfect and, you know, showing that I've got dirty laundry on the floor and, you know, I showed you my setup with my yoga pants and my bare feet here. Maybe it makes you feel better about your, you know, dirty laundry and your bare feet. I don't know. But it gives us that space where we're not exhausting ourselves trying to be the new normal, and rather defining what we want our normal to be. And I think that's really right in line with what Stanley said. I'm just going to call him Stanley because, you know,
we've both
been on the show. We're pals now, right? Oh my God, I love him. The Devil Wears Prada. I would watch that. If that came on, it's like one of those movies that no matter when it comes on, no matter where in the movie it is, I sit and I watch the rest of it. He's so terrific in everything he does. But it is true that it's like there's confidence and there's arrogance and there's ego. But you know those people who just feel arrived. They're just comfortable in their own skin. They know who they are. And, you know, I'm 49 and I kind of call them the FU 40s. Like, here's just who I am, right? Like, you like me, you don't like me. I have work to do. I have learning to do. But this is who I am, basically. Yeah. I know what I stand for in the world. I know who I stand with in the world and who I don't stand with. And I know, you know, the work that I'm willing to do and the ledges I'm willing to climb out on and who I'm willing to climb out on those ledges for. And there's a real grace in being able to just be in that space. But we can't be in that space if we're spending all of our time trying to impress people with work we don't care about so we can earn money that we don't need to buy things that we don't want. And, you know, I have people who have read my book and have said, this is awesome. If you've finally given me permission to just go after that seven-figure, you know, work and not care about anything else. And I've had people that have said, thank you for this book because you've finally given me permission to quit the, you know, law partnership and the seven-figure job and now, you know, go live in that 1800s farmhouse and make all my own energy. Like, everybody has a life that they want in this world, and nobody's going to tell you what that should be but you. It's got to come from you. You've got to decide what you care about and what you don't care about.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just whatever makes you happy, right? And if you feel that you've got a calling to do something or learn something new, then you should just get on with it, yeah? But the thing is that we haven't talked about the most important thing, doing the work.
Yes.
Yeah, right? I went to visit a friend of mine, yeah. And since I've known him, he's actually executive vice president of Wayfarer Entertainment, right? Mm. Which is quite big, yeah. It's a big company, yeah. They do a lot of movies, right? And he's the general manager there as well, right? And literally since I've known him, I met him at the Chief Digital Officer Summit in 2014, and he has become a pastor. Right. Since then. Okay. He's African American. Yeah. Lovely guy called Shane. Yeah. Lovely guy. And he's got five kids, I think, or four kids. And we went and I was his special guest at the church. Yeah. Right. And this is a gospel church in North Hollywood. Yeah.
Fantastic.
There are 20 singers. 20 singers on the stage, loads of instruments, just the most amazing sound in a it's actually in a big school hall in a school in North Hollywood, right? Mm. And you could not stop dancing. You had to dance. I mean, it was insane. But I was like his special guest. Yeah. So I took my sister who lives in Hollywood there, and we went and we were his special guests, and we basically walked in and they were like, "Hey, oh, you've come to see Shane. That's great." And like, they took us straight to the front of this place. You're talking at least 600 people.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And he got me standing up and said, "It's my friend Nathaniel from England. I'm so grateful to see him." And I couldn't even speak. I was completely speechless. I couldn't say a word. And he did the next week he actually spoke and did a sermon, right? So I'm really glad I stuck around, because I was there, I went twice to this church. And on the next weekend he did this sermon, right? And the message was, do the work.
Yes.
Right? And this is the most important thing that everybody's missing in self-development, yeah. And I don't care who they are. Yeah, I'm not talking about you, because you've done the work, you know what it's like, and you encourage people to do the work, right? But a lot of these people, excuse me, they expect it to just fall out of the sky. What do you think? You're going to wake up one morning and $10 million is going to fall in your lap.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because, you know, when I wrote Limitless, I thought I was writing a business book. Like, how do you make shifts in your career so that you can have the career that you want? I thought it was a business book. And then I got invited to the Today Show, and it was in the 9 o'clock hour, which tends to be the stay-at-home mom hour, Hoda and Jenna Bush. And I was like, what are they inviting me onto this show for, like, 9 o'clock hour? I wrote a business book. And I was like, all like huffy, high and mighty. And then I started listening to the market responding to the book and who was reading it and clinging onto. And, you know, Robin Roberts starts tweeting to everybody about, you know, the thing I said earlier about not giving a vote in your life to people who shouldn't have voices. And I was like, wait a minute. And I called my publisher and I was like, "Rohit, I think I wrote a self-help book." And he was like, "Yeah, duh." And I was so horrified. I actually wrote a blog post about this. I was so horrified at the idea that I wrote a self-help book, because all I could think of was self-help is just full of a bunch of like fridge magnet rationalizations about like, this might be 1 o'clock. Like, it's okay. Like, I was so offended by the idea that I was a self-helper until I started listening to the people who would come up to me after I spoke and get signatures in my book and in the book signing line. And what I realized was I was bringing the help in self-help, but they were bringing the self. And you got to really bring the self. Like, you have to challenge what you've believed, who you've been, what's made you comfortable in order to get the help. And then you have to do the work. And I often say that the secret to success is, this is it. Here's the big secret, right? I hope all your listeners are sitting down here. Here's the big secret. Show up, shut up, do the work. That's it.
That's your secret.
Show up, shut up, and do the work. That is the secret. And by the way, if you want people not to think that you're horrible on social media, don't just show the result. Show your work. Like, you never got any credit in mathematics in class by just giving the answer. You had to show your work, right? People want to see the success. They want to cheer for the success, but they're going to cheer so much louder if you also show them the work, not just the struggle, but like the mini successes along the way and the work that you're doing. So when I launched this course online about a month ago, I was posting about how I launched this thing and here's what I'm learning and here's how I'm figuring it out and here's the things that I did wrong. And I also just spent this entire weekend consuming every how to do a sales webinar and email funnel and all that stuff, because I don't know what I'm doing. And here's the thing that I learned worked. And by the way, here's what didn't. So here's your lesson. Don't be an imbecile and do the things do it this way instead. And, you know, I got so much great feedback and momentum from that, because I wasn't just being like, "Hey, look at me, I'm successful," but it's like, here's the work that I'm doing. So this idea that we have to do the work along the way has really made me feel so much more comfortable. I'm like, oh, it is like Jordan Harbinger, you know, Jordan Harbinger podcast. He gave me, he's a huge podcast, and he gave me a blurb for when the book came out in paperback. And it's something like, in a sea of self-sucking, self-help garbage, Limitless is actually one of the few books that makes you feel better after you've read it than before you started. Because, you know, he and I had a long conversation about this, and the truth is that most self-help stuff is designed to make you feel crappy because then you want to buy more of it, right? Like, it is like, it is not in their marketing plan. It's not in the business plan to solve your problem. It's in the plan to give you more. And I think because I wrote the book not thinking I was writing a self-help book and not being a self-help mindset, I'm of this idea that, like, we should solve your problem. With my executive coaching, I tell people, like, you have to hire me for a minimum of 3 months, but if we solve your problem sooner, I'll give you back your money. Like, I'd rather just solve your problem. I don't want to talk to somebody for years and years and years. It's not in anybody's best interest. So, you know, I think the course that I designed is really the same way. Like, it's there to help you get from here's where you're starting to there's where you're finishing. And that makes sense. But it does take work. Like, it's 2.5 hours in length. But it's going to take time. Like, you know, you're like the 58 minute course that you were talking about took you days.
I'm tired just thinking about your course. Really,
I know. But here's the thing. If you want to live the life that you were put on this earth to do, you cannot keep living the life that you're living right now, because that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And it's not, you know, you said something earlier that made me think of something in a way I've never thought about it before. You said, you know, you have to do the work that makes you happy. And when you said that, I heard in my mind, and that is probably not, like, what makes you happy is probably not the opinion of others, right? Like, we're all chasing everyone else being happy for us. And we think that we're happy temporarily because we're getting that, you know, that pat on the back and that approval, but it's not giving us fulfillment, long-term, deep and lasting fulfillment. And so we have to do the work that makes us happy, but it's probably not the work that's making other people happy for us.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big, big problem, is trying to live up to people's expectations of you and their demands on you. Yeah. It's like, look, you do what you want to do. That's really what you need to do in order to be happy. Yeah. Because if you are always judging your life about what other people think, oh, they said that's really good, it's like, well, you're clearly probably not living the life, or maybe you've got just yes people around you that say yes to everything that you do. I mean, or no, potentially, depending. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that we have a lot of people in our lives who we're worried that they won't like us if we want to live the life that we want to live. And, you know, we tell ourselves a lot of lies. Like, we tell ourselves, I'm not ready, when the truth is, you're never going to be ready. You have to just get started. The second lie is, I've never done this before. And we let the governor in our brain tell us that that means we can't do it now. When in fact, if we change the words from you've never done this before to you've never done this before, and you make it into a cheering section that's excited that you're trying new things, it changes everything. And then the third is, the people who like me who I am now, the people who like me small won't like me if I get bigger. And we tell ourselves that. And the fact is, that's actually not a lie. The lie we tell ourselves is that those people matter, that those people should that those people should stop us from doing what we want to do.
Great.
Because those people are really, they're telling us that out of three things. The first might be love. They love us. The last time they saw us happy was when we were living in, you know, under their roof, and we were, you know, leaving socks on the floor. And they're worried that if we change things, we won't be happy, and they just want us to be happy. And you can't blame them for that. It's coming out of a place of love. But they don't know who we are today. They don't know, you know, what we've done and our dreams and our the slings and the arrows and everything we've been through to get to who we are today. The second is jealousy, right? The people who judge your rise only means their fall. Like, they see success as a zero-sum game, like it's pie. Like, we can all have plenty of it. So, like, you got to ignore those toxic vampires. And then the last is fear. You go and you tell somebody you've got this great, big, hairy, audacious goal, and they go, oh my God, that's so scary. You can't do that. And what they really mean is, oh my God, that's so scary. I can't do that. And we hear that and we believe that that's fact. that we can't do it because they're so scared. And we're letting other people's lack of imagination hold us back from living our own ambitious, limitless life. And so I think it's figuring out who we want to have in our inner circles that's going to give us momentum and that's going to give us that push that's going to allow us to continue to move forward. And yeah, some of that is just knowing that we have to be comfortable that there are going to be people who are not going to be happy with our decisions, but later you'll find all those people have romantic memories about, you know, I loved hearing that idea from you and I was so excited for you, or, you know, they're so happy to finally see you smile or whatever the things are. It's any change I've ever made in my life, I've looked back and all those people that were naysayers have come back and been cheerleaders later.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I had a friend the other day said, I've been watching you. I've been watching what you're doing, what you've been doing in the past 5 years, and I'm really pleased to see you're doing so well with all of this. And that was wonderful coming from him, because I've sort of watched what he's been doing as well, and he's become quite happy and really determined to build something on his own. And you know, it's actually you're completely right. Everything you just said, completely correct. Yeah, and it's like actually, maybe they're not in a good place at that particular time. Maybe they're not very happy. So they automatically are negative around anything that is bright and fun and enjoyable. But also then excitement and worry are very closely connected, aren't they? Like it's a very, it's a weird study. I've been studying all this stuff. Yeah. Because I want to always improve on everything that I'm doing. Yeah. And when I'm trying something new, I'm always excited, but I'm also worried because if I mess up, I'm going to look like an idiot. Yeah. And I can't stand looking like an idiot. Right. But it's like, well, how do you think people learn how to become really good at stuff? Like they fail. Yeah. And they have to get up and do it again. Yeah.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. And I love the idea. Like, so I've been doing one of the sales webinars that I do for the course has been like the prequel to the course, right? You cannot take a course about becoming limitless unless you believe you can actually become limitless. So I've been doing this sales webinar, which is 40 minutes basically of me talking about these three lies that I just mentioned. Yeah. And, you know, one of them, and then, you know, you have to do the like 20 minute, here's what you get from the course thing, which is so strange. It's such an uncomfortable and new experience for me.
Oh, it's painful experience. Oh,
it's so, but what's amazing is that I've noticed that people stay on for the entirety of the like learning piece of the webinar. And then a lot of people stay on for the entirety of the 20 minutes of the sales. And then I stay on for like 25 minutes of doing Q&A. And I cannot believe like 80% of the people stay on for the entire thing.
And so, then boom, they push the buy button.
And then they push the buy button. And you know what? I mean, maybe I'm just a massive egomaniacal, you know, money grubbing. I don't know. But it is exciting to sit there and like watch the numbers come in. And it's wow, I'm giving people value. I'm teaching them something and they want more of it. Like that's, it is incredibly fulfilling in a business that shouldn't be personal, but feels really personal every time somebody doesn't buy or every time somebody doesn't like it, or you get a one-star review on Amazon and you're like crushed for days, but like the 55-star reviews mean nothing. You know, like what's wrong with us?
You know, you make me think about I've got an acquaintance that I spoke to the other week, and he wrote this book on Amazon. He launched it in an hour. He wrote a book in 1 hour, and I think it's called F It. Yeah. And all it says on each page is it says F It, F It, F It, F It. Right. I'm not going to swear because it's against my policy. Yes. Yeah. But that's basically what it says on every page. Right.
Yeah.
And when you look at the review on Amazon that this guy has given him, he's given him a 1-star review. And this guy is hilarious. He's basically said, I spent however long writing a book on blah, 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 blah. And your book has sold loads of copies. And all it says is 2 words on each page. I am deeply disappointed. This guy was fuming about it. Just cracked me up. Yeah. And it's like, well, actually, to someone that really took themselves that seriously, you know, someone like that coming along, creating that as an experiment just for fun, was an insult to them and their life. But actually, to people like us, we've got an open mind. It's actually quite a fun experiment, Like I experiment all the time with marketing tactics and live videos and things, you know. And it's just a matter of just pushing your boundaries and saying, well, okay, I'm nervous. I really am nervous about doing certain things. and I'm going to just do it anyway. Yeah. But then it's about saying, well, actually, do I really need to do that? Or can I do something else that I enjoy more? And it's knowing that fine line, isn't it? Between those two things. Yeah. Do I really have to do it? Or can I do something else which is going to give me just as good a result or better? Yeah.
Yeah. I hear stories like that effort book. And frankly, I applaud that. I do not see it as a reflection on my value as an author. I see it. I look and I'm like, what can I learn from that? Like, that was a really interesting marketing stunt. I'm fascinated by that. And it is, you know, back to what we were just talking about. I lost my train on it. Was the idea that fear and excitement, they actually feel the same in your body, but they manifest in your brain differently. So you still have the same racing heart rate, and you still have the same, you know, sweats, and you still have the same runs or whatever. And you still have the same hyper-focused mind. But you're telling yourself a different story about it. So either you're telling yourself like, oh my God, I'm going to die, everything's going to fall apart. Or you're saying, this is really exciting, I've never done this. So go back to the, like, I've never done this before. How do you turn the governor into a cheerleader? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think there's a lot of power in pushing yourself to do things that are uncomfortable. And here's the nice thing about this idea of rejecting the new normal, right? Like what is the thing that stands in between you and making a change ever? It's not wanting to be uncomfortable, right? It's the fear of failure. It's not wanting to be uncomfortable. It's the anxiety. It's the worry. It's the stress. So what are we all getting really good at right now? We're getting really good at being uncomfortable. We're getting really good at being worried, about being stressed, about being anxious. We're really good at the uncertain, the moments in between. Yeah. The moments in between are the things that in change we want to race through. We want to get through it as fast as possible so we can get to the other side and it's comfortable. Nobody leaps from one canoe to the other in slow motion. You go as fast as possible because the in-between is where you might fall in the river. And obviously there's gravity, so that's probably a bad example. But we don't like these uncomfortable in-between. So here's the really good news. When we come out of this, and we say, what's the new normal? What's our normal? What's the normal we want, right? When life, quote unquote, goes back to normal, is the life we're going back to the normal that we really want? Is that the life that we're really looking for? Here's the answer. You now have the power to make any change that you want to make because you've gotten really good at the thing that has been holding you back from making that change before. You've gotten really good at being uncomfortable. So we're all able to actually, the thing that stopped us no longer has to be in our way.
Yeah, I agree completely. So if people want to find you, they go to heylgo.com, right?
And that's right.
If they want your course, they go to heylgo.com/learn, and then they can do that. But also they can find your book, Limitless, right?
Yes. So my book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere fine books are sold. Yeah. And if they just want a little more of my punch in the face, wrapped in a warm hug. I've been described as a kick in the ass wrapped in a warm hug, but I
see that in you. I can see that in you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of my energy. So if they want a little bit more of that, of course, at heylgo.com, they can sign up for the newsletter as well. And if they sign up for the newsletter, they'll hear about some of these like masterclasses that I'm giving on the lies that we're telling ourselves or how to find your voice of leadership, or of course, more about the course at heylgo.com/learn.
Super. Well, thank you. That's been fantastic. Absolutely.
Thank
brilliant.
You so much.
Thanks for listening to Positive Personal Power. Do subscribe via your favorite podcasting app and please leave us a 5-star review. Or sign up on our website, positivepersonalpower.net, for weekly emails and updates, and do share our episodes with your friends and on social media. Feel free to reach out anytime.